You're listening to Gillespie Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com. And welcome to Gillespie on FTRradio.com on this Tuesday night. Holy cow, it's been a short week, but it's already been an interesting week.
It sure has.
And with me, complete with a brand new intro music, because I always give Mark Warner one. And he's not with us this week, but with me is my co-host and her brand new intro music, the Smoozy Q.
Oh, Susie Q, baby, I love you, Susie Q.
Smoozy.
Hi.
How do you like that? I got you some intro music.
Love it. Now I really feel like I'm truly a part of the show.
You are totally a part of the show.
And I love that song, too.
Good. I didn't ask Mark. what I was going to give him, and he's demanded that I change it, and I'm refusing.
Good for you.
And since he's going to be kind of in and out, and we've granted Mark a little bit of a reprieve, he's working his tail off for the Pence campaign, as well as, you know, his regular job. So we've kind of granted him a bit of a reprieve, but he's just impressed upon me how much he hates his intro music, and that only means that I need to play it more. But since he's not here, I was like, well, you know what? Susie's part of the show now. She needs to have her own intro music. I can't leave you out in the cold like that.
No.
So, a little Susie Q for the Smoozy Q.
Woohoo!
Well, Susie, we have pretty much an interesting show tonight.
We most certainly do.
We most certainly do. And our first guest tonight, obviously, a ton of stuff, a certain situation involving a certain Senate candidate in a certain state known as the Show Me State.
Mm-hmm.
Which you happen to be familiar with.
I am quite familiar with it, yes.
There is something that kind of went down there.
Yeah.
We will be addressing that tonight.
But we most certainly will.
But before we get to that, we will also talk with the president of Americans for Prosperity, Tim Phillips. Last week, we spoke with Seth Morgan and Patrick Werner, who are state reps. Seth is the state policy director for Ohio. Patrick is the state director for Missouri. We talked to the big dog tonight.
We did. It was great.
He is a stellar guy.
He sure is.
And so we're talking to Tim tonight about some of the initiatives that AFP is taking on right now, including a huge ad buy. And we talk a little bit about the other state programs that are going on in the country, as well as just kind of the general feeling of, you know, the electorate out there. And then we are supposed to have on tonight, a certain member of Congress.
Yes, I was very, very much looking forward to our interview tonight.
Yes, I'm going to leave it at that.
Yep.
I'm going to leave it at that. But more importantly, because we care about, you know, topical issues, not just you know, what's going on in the world of politics, but things that really matter.
Right.
There have been two deaths that are touching America right now.
Yes.
And that is the director of Top Gun,
mm-hmm.
Iceman, Tony Scott, and comedic legend, Phyllis Diller.
My gal, Phyllis.
It's a nation in mourning.
It is. It's been, as I said to someone earlier today, it's been a really bad day, and not because of anything that directly happened to me, but, you know, first I read about Tony Scott this morning, and that's a sad, sad situation. And, of course, seeing him and remembering that he was the director for Top Gun brought back a lot of memories. And then the news about Phyllis Diller also was sad because, you know, I hearken back to my youth and her stellar appearances on the Scooby-Doo show. And I don't know if you knew this, but she has ties to St. Louis.
She does.
She does. She moved here to a suburb called Webster Groves in like I want to say the early 60s, and she performed in Gaslight Square and considered this her home.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, I'm pretty sure about this. I'm pretty sure she has a star on the Walk of Fame that's here in St. Louis in University City. Well, and so, yeah, it was very, very saddened by that news.
Well, now that she's passed, they actually should move that star to the top of the arch.
Well, you know, I don't know as many people would see it there.
Oh, but I mean, you're coming across the mighty Mississippi. You look at the arch and you see, well, it's probably a tiny star, isn't it?
It's not real big, and the arch is like 600 and some odd feet in the air. So I don't know how well you'd be able to see it.
What they should do is they should make it like a giant medallion and and have it dangle in between, well, the two pillars as they come to meet in the middle. But, you know, just like a giant chain, you know, and say, "We miss you, Phyllis." I don't know.
And that would be very, a very nice way to honor her memory.
It would be. I mean, you know, and you know, live up that St. Louis connection. I mean, obviously, it's a down year for St. Louis because you have to deal with the Rams for one more year.
Oh, God. And hey, wait, I take that back. They did beat the Chiefs the other day.
Well, at least you got that going for you. But do I need to remind you how they fared against the Indianapolis Colts?
Yeah.
Okay. We lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers, but, you know, that was a close game till the very end.
I preferred the second I-70 matchup of the season rather than the first.
I can imagine you would. I would imagine you would. And plus, the Cardinals are having to deal with the loss of Albert Pujols, and that has them relegated to third in this NL Central. Do you feel like I'm kind of rubbing it in a bit?
A little bit. I'm feeling the salt in the wound.
There's just no love for Susie right now. Oh, man. Well, gosh, you know, we have so much going on tonight that we really probably should just get right into the show.
Yeah.
So coming up next, we will talk with President of Americans for Prosperity, Tim Phillips. And then following that, will we have our congressional call-in?
Or will we have an empty chair?
Good question. Well, everyone will soon find out. So stick around. We'll have more here on Gillespie with Josh in the Q on FTRradio.com. Stick around. Something moving, feeling newer.
It is real quiet, muddy water. In 2009, Barack Obama said,
"I'm pledging to cut the deficit by half by the end of my first term in office."
Under President Obama,
$5 trillion in debt that have been added under this administration.
Roughly 3 years.
Government spending
$15 trillion.
The nation's
exploding
debt.
It is now
unfunded debt.
$15 trillion.
I will be held accountable. If I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term proposition. I will be held accountable.
Americans for Prosperity is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Joining Susie and me is someone we are very proud to have on the show. He is the president of Americans for Prosperity. We have on Tim Phillips. Tim, thanks for being on the show this week.
You bet, Josh. Good talking to you and Susie.
We are definitely pleased to have you on. We know that your time is short, so we're going to kind of get right down to it. A few weeks ago, Americans for Prosperity started rolling out what essentially is a nationwide campaign in selected states, but it's still a nationwide campaign against Barack Obama, President Obama. And this is a huge ad buy, a $27 million ad buy. Could you tell us a little bit about the ad or ads? I think you're actually running two, and we'll run both of these ads later in the show. But could you tell us a little bit about these ads and why you targeted certain states?
Absolutely, Josh. We had never at Americans for Prosperity, in all the 8 years of our organization's history, done express advocacy, where we do ads urging citizens to vote no on a candidate. We've just never done that before. We like sticking just to the issues and staying a step removed from politics. Mm-hmm. But President Obama's policies have been so disastrous for our economy, for our prosperity, for economic freedom. We felt we had to act. So we've launched this television ad effort in 11 states. You can probably imagine where those states are, places like Florida and Ohio and North Carolina and Virginia and Colorado and Nevada and New Mexico and, you know, across the country, really, Wisconsin. And the ads, are, there are two of them, as you mentioned. The first one was a direct approach where we took President Obama's own words in 2009 when he was newly elected, when he said, as you may remember, hey, if I don't get the economy moving, if I don't get government spending under control, deficits and debt, then I'm going to be a one-term proposition. We use that statement. We roll out the fact that deficits, debt, government spending have exploded under this president with the accompanying malaise on the economic front. And we end it by saying, let's take him up on that. Let's make him a one-term president. The current ad's a little different. You know, we've been looking at swing voters, candidly, and they're only about maybe 7-8% of the electorate that fits that bill at this point with regard to the president. And we wanted to reach out to them. And so we decided to talk with folks, real people, not actors, who had voted for President Obama 4 years ago, but this year they're making a different choice. And we just did open interviews, Josh. We literally just turned the camera on and said, okay, you voted for the president 4 years ago. What were your thoughts now? And then we took interviews, clips of the interviews, and the ad simply does that. We, you know, some of the folks are saying, look, I believed in the hope and change. I believed in all that rhetoric, and I want to like him, and I still do, but he's just failed. Whether it's the health care legislation that's a disaster, or whether it's all this government spending that's stopping job growth. So it's in their own words, and we think that's particularly effective in trying to reach out to that tiny slice of the electorate. I mean, guys, it's less than, you know, 1 in 10 Americans at this point who are really up in the air. So that's what that ad's doing. It is a big ad effort. But this is a crucial time for our country.
What has the response been like to these ads? I mean, obviously, you are running these in swing states. The states that you mentioned, they are these are states that President Obama won in 2008, and they are definitely in play this time. What has been the response?
I think two different key points that we found. I was in Nevada, for example, just last Thursday, a state where we're running and where the president, by the way, is behind right now, and he won that state 4 years ago. And there, people, it's making them stop and wonder and stop and think. I mean, so often ads perhaps are too political, if that makes any sense. These are just, you know, they have the kind of the ominous voice of God, you know, in the background intoning all these horrible things and the slow motion footage. You've seen that before in political ads. This ad's different. It's just average people talking about why they're not going to vote for this president yet. I think it's gotten people's attention, certainly those in the middle, which is the idea. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, and I think this is the case from talking to a lot of our grassroots activists out there, hopefully it's encouraging our activists out there, our base people who are going, you know, this is a tough fight. It's never easy to beat an incumbent president with all the advantages that the president has. But by golly, there are some average Americans just like us who voted for him last time, who've changed their mind and have the guts to speak out about it. So I think it's encouraging our activists that this can be done, we can win this thing. And I know with those folks in the middle that it's giving them pause, because it's not just another political ad. It's average folks, real people just like them who voted for the president 4 years ago who are taking a different path this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me, you say that this is the first time that you've basically targeted an elected official and you're telling people not to vote for him. Is this kind of how you're rolling out some of these state campaigns? Like, for instance, our listeners will know that we spoke with Seth Morgan from AFP Ohio and Patrick Werner from AFP Missouri. And they have, you know, has Brown worked for you targeting Sherrod
right.
Brown? And then No Mo Spending, which is targeting Senator Claire McCaskill. Is this kind of way we see a top-down approach where you're targeting not just the president, but Democrats who have supported the Obama agenda?
No, those are different ads and a different effort. The presidential ads that we've been talking about are the only place that Americans for Prosperity are directly urging people to vote a certain way, in this case, to vote no on President Obama's second term.
Okay.
The Senate television ads and social media ads and grassroots rallies and events like, you know, the Test for Truth tour in Montana and holding Bill Nelson accountable, or Senator Nelson accountable in Florida, Those are traditional C4 issue efforts where we take the voting record of those senators, you know, that are so bad. I mean, Claire McCaskill talks about tries to say she's a moderate, and in reality, she's just not a big government liberal, right? We know that. I mean, she voted for the stimulus. She voted for the health care takeover. Senator Nelson, he loves to talk about how independent he is for Florida. Give me a break. That guy's voted for every big piece of legislation from the president. But those efforts are to make sure we're educating folks in those states on the records of their incumbent senator, and urging them with grassroots action to change. And so that's a different effort. Those are very much issue efforts, really hammering the record of those senators and asking grassroots activists and others to take action, to say, hey, look, change your ways, or you know, we're going to change you, basically. But with the president, it's a direct express advocacy. And there's a legal difference. I'm not trying to, you know, play nuance with you guys. There's a legal difference with regard to our tax status, et cetera.
No,
so
I gather.
With the express advocacy on President Obama, that's the only place we're actually saying, hey, this guy has, what he's done is wrong. Vote no on him. Those Senate efforts, you know, they're different. They're more traditional issue efforts. Although they're hard-hitting. They're hard-hitting on the issues, on the record of those senators. We just aren't calling for any political activity with regard to those senators.
We're talking with Tim Phillips, president of Americans for Prosperity. Tim, as this campaign has kind of progressed, the presidential campaign, that is, we're seeing a lot of things coming out against the president, just in terms of people questioning his leadership, kind of what we're seeing in your ads, people who thought that they heard a message of hope and change, but, you know, essentially they didn't get that. We're seeing the bloated deficits. What is AFP doing in states? How can they get involved in these in some of these state chapters? And how many state chapters are there? Well, this is kind of a loaded question here for you.
No, absolutely.
But
we have full-time staff in 32 states across the country, and those stretch from Florida to California. Indiana, obviously, is a key state for us that we're active in. So we have full-time staff on the ground in 32 states. Folks can go to our website, AmericansForProsperity.org, and they can pull up their individual state. They can see what's happening with AFP and their home state, and we'd love for them to get involved. And we do everything from local issues, whether it's a local tax, property tax battle where we're trying to roll back property tax increases, or whether it's a state issue on the budget or spending, or these terrible health care exchanges that are designed to implement Obamacare at the local level, and then right up to the federal level where, you know, we hold these senators accountable and members of Congress accountable as well. And folks can get involved and do that. And we would love for them to do so. I mean, you know, in Indiana, I've long admired Mike Pence, who is, in my mind, he really was the conscience from a conservative free market perspective in the House of Representatives. And that really is, I view him as the conscience, and I view Paul Ryan as kind of the idea maker, the guy who's driving ideas. And so you're blessed in Indiana to have just a wonderful member of Congress, and I'm so excited to see him running for governor. But folks can get involved, and we need for them to. It's a big time for our nation, and we want to be as strong as we possibly can right now.
Well, I definitely know that you are holding not just Democrats but Republicans accountable.
You bet.
And you have a strong chapter here in Indiana. I know your state director, Chase Downham. He's an incredible individual. And it was actually sitting down and talking with him. I mean, I knew about AFP. I know the stuff that you guys have done, but I've seen what you've done nationally. And he was able to inform me of all the things that you guys do locally and all that the chapters are doing locally, especially targeting some of these more local tax increases that seemingly go under the radar. And
what you just said is exactly right, Josh. You know, for so long, the liberals, they had their troops and their money at the state and local level. You know, they had the government employee unions, the private sector unions, they had the radical environmental lobby. And on our side, you know, the side of just, hey, don't spend more money, don't tax us more, don't take us deeper into debt. We had a lot of average folks who were with us, but we weren't mobilized. And with AFT staff like Chase, and now with the new media network, folks like you and Susie who are out there, sounding the alarm on the new media, the social media, with talk radio, I feel like for the first time, our side has that same local and state infrastructure. You know, real troops, a little bit of money, a lot of cohesion now in pursuit of our values, our principles. It's an exciting time. I know some people get discouraged sometimes, and I get that. It can be frustrating. But I'm the most encouraged I've ever been. I've been doing this. I'm an old guy, guys. I've been doing this for 26 years now, 27 years, actually. I've never been more encouraged than right now. But I look not just at the country, I believe, coming our way on the key issues, which it is, by the way, but I look at the fact that for the first time in my lifetime, we have a literally integrated across the board movement, an economic freedom movement, a conservative movement that's got local media, both social media and more traditional media. It's got local activism with tea parties and groups like AFP and others. It's got some money. We're able to raise money, and frankly, no one likes to talk about it, but it takes money to do all this. It does, whether it's listeners to you or whether it's advertisers or whether it's folks who support AFP. It takes that money to do that. We don't have forced dues the way the left does, and I'm glad, by the way. We don't want that. We want freedom for people.
Yeah.
But I'm excited. We've got a movement that is cohesive, and it starts with local networks, and it does help to have a national presence, and we can bring in the bigger ad effort, the $27 million effort you talked about with regard to President Obama on the Express advocacy. But it also takes that local leadership, folks like you, folks like Chase, and our side has that for the first time in my lifetime.
Do you see that that volunteers and just activists in general are more pumped up now than they've ever been? And do you think that the media has kind of and the president and Congress and everybody else has just woken up this sleeping giant?
The way I would put it, pumped up is one thing, and that's important. I felt like we were pumped up in kind of a rah-rah rally fashion in 2009-10. And that was good, by the way. We needed that.
Mm-hmm.
What I see now on the road is just a gritty determination to take our country back. I know you've seen this, but so often on our side, it's a sacrifice for our folks to be involved, right? They've got families, they've got businesses, jobs, everything else, churches, synagogues, everything else they're trying to do. Being involved in the public policy arena is a sacrifice for them. They don't mm-hmm. want anything from government other than to be left alone to enjoy their freedom and to pursue economic freedom and their own happiness and their own lifestyle in their area. That is a sacrifice to get involved to fight for that. And so what I see now is just a grim determination, kind of a feeling like, you know what, I may not want to be involved every day. I'd rather be doing other things, but I'm going to do this. We're going to take our country back. We're going in a different direction. If it means me sacrificing time away from my job or my family or other civic activities I would rather do, so be it. And so I see a grim determination, which is wonderful, because that's long-lasting. That's something you can build on in the long haul. So, yeah, there is pump up. There is a sense of energy and excitement. But I think it's translated at this point, to 2 years after 2010, with that determination that we're gonna take our country back.
Well, Tim, I know that you're kind of short on time, but I thank you for being on this week. We've been talking with Tim Phillips, president of Americans for Prosperity. You can find out more at americansforprosperity.org. There you can find out if there is a chapter in your state. And, well, like Tim said, there are 32 chapters. There's a good chance there probably is. So, Tim, thanks again for being on the show this week.
You bet, Josh and Susie. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
You're thanks. Welcome. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this.
In 2008, I voted for President Obama with no reluctance.
He presented himself as something different.
I had hoped that the new president would bring new jobs, not major layoffs, not people going through major foreclosures on their homes.
He did get his health care through, but at what cost?
He said he was going to cut the deficit in his first term. I've seen zero interest in reducing spending. He inherited a bad situation, but he made it worse.
I think he's a great person. I don't feel he is the right leader for our country, though.
I still believe in hope and change. I just don't think Obama's the way to go for that.
The president has not earned re-election in 2012, in my book.
I've seen his now definition of hope and change. It's not the hope and change I want. It's not the hope and change I thought I was going to get. I don't feel that I helped my grandchildren by voting for President Obama, and I regret that.
Americans for Prosperity is responsible for the content of this advertising.
welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Susie.
Yes.
It's been a bit of a crazy day.
We're
recording here on Monday. We had originally scheduled Todd Akin.
We sure did. We scheduled that last week.
Kid you not. We had Todd Akin scheduled for this segment. And then yesterday, he goes on the Jayco Report. Charles Jayco there in Missouri. And, well, for those of you who may not heard it, I'm going to give you, I'm going to play a little clip for you. And, well, this will be the topic of our segment. So sit back and listen to this.
What about in the case of rape? Should it be legal or not?
Well, you know, people always want to try and make that as one of those things. Well, how do you slice this particularly mm-hmm. tough sort of ethical question? It seems to me, first of all, from what I understand from doctors, that's really rare. If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down.
Holy cow, Susie.
Yeah.
So, okay. So Todd Akin decided, his team canceled on us today.
They did. They said he'd had some scheduling changes, and I think that's not surprising.
Not surprising, especially after that. Yeah, not surprising. He's already been on Mike Huckabee's show. He was on Sean Hannity's show. And we just found out the reason he's not on our show tonight is that he is doing, allegedly, is doing Piers Morgan.
Yeah, bumped for Piers Morgan. Bump. I never thought I would utter those words.
I didn't either. So, you know, instead of having Congressman Akin on tonight, instead to bring us kind of the lowdown on all of this, we have instead the editor-in-chief of Liberty News. You know him as the All-American blogger. We have on Duane Lester. Duane, thanks for being on tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. I appreciate you inviting me.
Absolutely.
And looking at Twitchy, they actually have posted at 7:35 that Piers Morgan is tweeting that Todd Akin will be on tonight.
Okay, well, we were discussing this before we went on the air here, that there's been kind of some conflicting tweets being sent out today, obviously, with kind of the breaking news of, yesterday's news wasn't exactly breaking news, but just kind of, will Todd Akin drop out, will he not? Eric Erickson has actually been tweeting that he would drop out. Then you had Dana Lash, syndicated conservative talk show host from St. Louis, saying that he wasn't going to drop out. Eric Erickson saying that he was going to be on Piers Morgan. Dana Lash saying he wasn't going to be on Piers Morgan. So at least Piers has and Twitchy have confirmed it. But Duane, you said earlier that you've kind of been off Twitter today, but undoubtedly you've seen the news. You've kind of heard some of the scuttlebutt of kind of what's been going on. What do you make of this?
Well, it is an incredible brain fart, and you know, in my opinion,
that's
the best way
lightly.
I can put it. This guy took a very simple question to answer, in my opinion, and created this out of nothing. The idea that you can't say, look, rape is awful, I abhor the entire idea and offer my condolences and sympathy to someone who is a rape victim, but there's no reason to compound that tragedy with another. The inability to say that, but instead to create this firestorm that we've seen all day today is sickening to me. How can you be however many term congressman this guy is and completely screw up what is, in my opinion, a softball question for any pro-life advocate?
Susie sent me the clip yesterday. You know, she even prefaced it being like, the Akin campaign may not be calling in tomorrow. but I watched it and I was like, oh, that was a harmless interview. He just gave a really ridiculous answer to a pro-life question. Right. Other than that, I don't see what the problem is here. You know, it was mind-boggling. It really was. It was a softball question.
I've watched it a couple times, and it's the word legitimate that really screwed him in this. And I don't know, is this a family show? I probably shouldn't have said screwed him, but no, I apologize.
It's FTR radio. Wayne,
FTR
you
radio,
know.
So, you know, I understand the class level involved here. but, you know, it's that word that he is the decider, essentially, of what, you know, what is a legitimate rape. That whole question is what bothers me most about it is that he believes that he can decide what's legitimate. But then it also opens up this meme, this war on women idea that was dead and in the ground, it has breathed new life into it, and now we have to hear about how Paul Ryan is just a Wisconsin version of Todd Akin, and they're taking this one answer, and they are smearing every Republican candidate with it. And I think that's why you've seen the response you've seen today, because everybody out there knows if I don't come out against this and say that he was wrong and that his comment was absurd, that I will get painted with it also. And that's why you've seen a lot of what you've seen today. It has created this radioactivity around Todd Akin that nobody wants to be a part of.
Now, you guys, you know, you both live in Missouri. You just, the primary was what, a week ago?
2 weeks.
2 weeks ago? Okay, mm-hmm. So it hasn't been that long. It was a pretty vicious primary, can we say?
It was hotly contested.
Yeah, right. To say the least. And there were a lot of parties involved. Everyone was kind of spreading themselves around. Would we have expected something like this to happen from any of the other candidates?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I don't know that you expect that something like this to happen from anybody except for maybe Joe Biden.
Yeah, this really was a Biden-esque mistake. I mean,
it was. And honestly, I don't know that any of the three are known for, stepping in it on a regular basis. They all have very, in my observation, fairly similar stances on a lot of the issues. All I can add to that is from having observed in person the Senate debate that was held in St. Charles back in June. Of the three, Akin seemed to actually be the most agile, the quickest on his feet, and the most well-rounded in his responses and his ability to respond to the questions. I'm frankly shocked that he, made the mistake that he made. It doesn't strike me as something I would expect any of the three to have done, honestly.
Well, I see. And I was at Lincoln Days down in Kansas City this year, and they had a debate between John Bruner and Sarah Steelman and Todd Akin. And I sat and watched the entire thing, and I thought Todd Akin was the best debater on the stage. I'm not going to say that I was, I watched the debate and left a Todd Akin fan, but watching it, I thought he clearly was the best performer on the stage. He had the cleanest, crispest answers. Is that a word, crispest?
I don't know.
It said, sounds good.
You said clean, and I'm almost ready to label you a racist.
He didn't say articulate.
Oh, that's okay. I'm sorry.
He was very articulate, but I sat and watched this, and I thought this guy is polished. Is the word to, mm-hmm. He's polished, and the idea that someone that has been doing this for as long as he has could come out and say something like that, it stuns me.
I'm still just trying to wrap my head around this, and I gather that from watching Twitter all day today, just to kind of see how the right has kind of done what Democrats enjoy seeing us do, and that's kind of attack ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You have one contingency who is out there like, okay, get rid of Akin. I mean, National Review came out against Akin. Let's see. Who else? Ron Johnson came out against him. Scott Brown came out against him.
Alan West.
Alan, oh, wow. So a lot of people have really kind of come out against this. But then you have this other, crowd who is like, well, this is just the establishment trying to go after a true conservative. When I think you guys just basically said the other people who were involved in this race, it's not that they weren't true conservatives. I mean, you had Sarah Palin in the Tea Party Express out in favor of Sarah Steelman.
Yeah, that's questionable in my opinion, but
no.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone really questioned any of the three's conservative credentials. I think any of them would line up pretty close, which is why I always thought it interesting that as soon as the race was over, Akin was immediately labeled as the most extreme of the three candidates. Really, I'm pretty sure that they would have been labeling, McCaskill would have been labeling any of the three
but
the most extreme.
Who was labeling him that?
McCaskill.
It was McCaskill. Actually, the Democrats spent like $2 million to call Todd Akin the most conservative man in the race.
Yeah, that's what I'm. And that's the thing, is that you have a lot of people who are saying, well, the Democrats were actually in favor of Akin.
Right, and you can see why now.
I have trouble believing that they had a crystal ball that showed them this, but apparently they felt like they had they saw a weakness that they could exploit, and he didn't hurt their chances of doing that.
No,
he was also the weakest up against McCaskill towards the end, so that could have had a lot to do with it.
In the head-to-head polls, that's true. Still with a substantial lead, though.
Right.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I mean, again, we're recording this on Monday night. Apparently, Todd Akin has until sometime Tuesday to officially drop out without his name appearing on the ballot. So by the time this show airs, we'll know whether Todd Akin has actually dropped out. And maybe this conversation's all for naught. But frankly, it's worth it to discuss this so we can figure out how to get past these moments within our party. But
Josh, I want to say something here about trying to get past it. I mean, my hope since this initially hit the wires, so to speak, was that he would come back and issue a statement and
well, he sort of did.
Step up. And honestly, the statement he issued yesterday was okay. Today, he made some very sincere, real kind of ownership apology statements, especially on Huckabee that I saw. Mm-hmm. And when I say ownership apologies, I mean, he didn't try to nuance it. He didn't try and say, oh, you didn't understand the context. Yeah. He didn't do any of that baloney that you often see candidates do. He actually said, I made a mistake. I said something wrong. I shouldn't have said it. When you do that, when you make a mistake, you apologize. And so I'm apologizing. He also was very, very clear about the fact that there's no such thing as a legitimate rape. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I felt like the apologies that he issued were heartfelt and not just a sort of paying lip service to the fact that it caused, a stir.
Well, do you see this as possibly trying to mend fences? I mean, basically, a lot of people I feel are seeing this as him just kind of burning everything to the ground, Sherman style, and not on purpose. It's just that, you know, it was a comment that was made, and it has just kind of exploded.
Oh, I don't know. I took his comments today, at least the ones that I've read. Now, I didn't watch his appearance on Huckabee or listen to it, and I haven't listened to the appearance on Hannity. And we have yet to see if he'll be on Piers Morgan. But what I what I read didn't strike me as burn it to the ground. It struck me as someone who really wants to stay in the race and wants people to know, you know, he's sorry for what was said, and he did not intend for this to happen. Whether it's enough, I mean, he I think it was during the Hannity show, maybe, when he was talking about the fact that, you know, he believes in mercy and he's hopeful that the voters, will understand that people do make mistakes sometimes with what they say and that sort of thing. I just don't know that it's enough to get him past it. I really don't.
Well, I've been a fan of Todd Akin's. I mean, I don't know him, know of him that well, except that I know that he's a strong conservative member of Congress. And I'm always a fan of our solidly conservative guys who will stand on principle regardless of those who are coming down around him and saying, you need to vote this way, and he stood up to that. And in a sense, he's kind of in that situation right now.
It's a Facebook page these days.
What?
But where's the...
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I was like, that's a different voice.
I was actually looking up Piers Morgan.
And
fooled you.
Comes on.
No, it's okay. But, he's getting these calls. Apparently, like we had discussed earlier tonight, Susie, apparently the NRSC is ready to just drop out if Akin stays in.
Here's what I put on All American Blogger today in the second update of the Todd Akin scandal.
Mm-hmm.
American Crossroads, Karl Rove's group, has pledged that millions of dollars on behalf of Akin's campaign in Missouri will not be there if Akin does not quit the race. They're not giving him any money. The NRSC said they would not be spending the $5 million they'd intended to spend in Missouri. So you got those two things. You got Hannity calling him out. You got who else? Scott Brown, Ron Johnson.
John Cornyn,
all these people are calling him out. How do you stay in knowing that the money that was going to be there won't be there anymore?
I don't know the answer to that, Dwayne, and that's why I see this as a slightly different situation, or maybe more than slightly different situation than standing on principle when it comes to a vote, for instance, on the Medicare drug prescription drug plan, or on No Child Left Behind and on TARP. You know, those were votes that he was a holdout, and I know a lot of pressure was brought to bear upon him to try and secure his vote, and he stuck to his guns, and that's one of the reasons I really respected him even back early on when I was still in my liberal days. I respected at least the fact that the guy seemed to stand on principle. this isn't that type of situation. I mean, he's standing, he could stand firm, but if you don't have the support financially in the midst of a tough campaign, I don't know how you weather that storm. I'd like to think that you can. I like the guy. I like what he stands for. I don't agree with everything he says, obviously. And I really wish he hadn't said what he said yesterday. But I don't know how you weather this type of situation with that type of pressure coming at you from the people who otherwise would be, when you know, they'd have your back and they'd be supporting you financially. I just don't know the answer to that.
Well, I think the question that you have to take into consideration, I mean, even outside of all the money that is potentially being lost here, is that, you know, if he stays in the race, you know, regardless of the money, he stays in, how does he win over the independents? Now, I know that Missouri is starting to trend, you know, more red.
That's Todd Akin.
He decided
not to do Piers. He's like, no, we'll be on your show instead. I mean, how do you, again, in a state that was that is trending red, away from Obama, mm-hmm. How do you win over those skeptical voters now? I mean, it seems as if the path to victory just became a whole lot harder. Even if he was polling less against, you know, the worst of the three against McCaskill post, you know, pre-primary, post-primary, whatever. You know, the fact is that pre these comments, he was going to have money from super PACs. He was going to have money from the party. He was going to have support from sitting senators. Mm-hmm. And now all of that is gone.
Well, on top of that, and Dwayne, maybe you've got some thoughts on this as well, but, you know, he's obviously not the only race going on in Missouri. I mean, I think I'm fairly comfortable predicting that Missouri is going to go red as far as the presidential race goes. But I was hoping to see Akin ride the coattails of Romney and Ryan and turn our Senate seat red as well. We've got other tough races here in Missouri going on right now. There's the race for governor. Dave Spence is challenging Jay Nixon. Pete Kinder is fighting Susan Monti at the lieutenant governor spot. There's all these statewide races that, again, you know, these folks are all kind of traveling around together. I just saw them all last Wednesday on their victory bus tour stop here in St. Louis, and it was Ann Wagner and Todd Akin and Roy Blunt and Dave Spence and Pete Kinder and all those guys. They were all kind of in this together. So what do those candidates do now? I mean, if they don't distance themselves from him, they run the risk that they're damaging their own campaigns.
That's key right there. I mean, that's what I said meant earlier when I was saying he's radioactive. What it reminds me of, honestly, I don't know how big you are on your 80s movies, but back in the 80s, there was a movie called Can't Buy Me Love with Patrick
Dillon. Oh, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and towards the end of the movie, when everyone finds out that this guy was, you know, something that he was pretending to be something, none of them wanted anything to do with him. And I kind of see the same thing. You know, Akin's about to get the Ronald Miller treatment.
Oh, poor Ronnie Miller.
And everybody's just going to say, I don't even know you, dude. I don't even know you. I don't know.
I don't know if doing the African anteater ritual will save Akin.
Well, okay, guys. Now, again, right now, all we're doing is speculating because this is Monday night. But let's presume for a second that Todd Akin steps down tomorrow. There have been a number of names that have been tossed out as possibilities to replace him on the ticket, namely John Ashcroft, Kit Bond, Jim Talent, Ann Wagner was mentioned. I believe even there were a couple of other names that were mentioned who were more statewide officials. Who is the best choice out of these, and who is probably the most likely choice?
Well, I guess I'm a bit ignorant on how we would choose. Is this something that the party would do? Would the party select this? Or would it just go to who came in second in the primaries? Because then it would be John Bruner, and I wouldn't have a problem with that.
My initial assumption before reading some of the articles on it was that it would just go to the person who came in second in the primary. But from what I'm gathering, and I haven't researched this to verify, so you know I may have it wrong. But from what I'm gathering, this may be a party pick. And now it's not the same situation as we had in 2000 with the Carnahan situation, because in that situation, the candidate was already on the ballot. We were into October, and then unfortunately he died in the plane crash. And because of that, the election went forward with him on the ballot, and then the governor was allowed to pick his replacement. This is not that type of situation. Since we're within time for Aiken to drop and remove his name from the ballot. But I'm gathering that it's a state party issue that they can select. And if that is in fact true, I mean, I don't know how realistic those names that you just mentioned, Josh, are. I mean, I think Kit Bond is probably a little beyond his Senate years, if you will. I'm trying to say that delicately. and Ashcroft, I think, has, you know, he's served in a number of different positions and may be beyond it as well. Talent strikes me as someone who'd be well-liked, well-received. You know, the problem I see there is he's the one who went up against McCaskill in 2006. Is that does that serve as a detriment? And the other name you mentioned, Ann Wagner, the first time I saw that, I was a little surprised, but then I thought, well, that'd be kind of interesting. They could do a little double switch, little double swap there and bump her over to the Senate race and, you know, bring someone along for the second district. And that might be kind of interesting to see. I mean, I like Ann Wagner a lot.
We're talking with Dwayne Lester, the All-American blogger and as well as the Smoozy Q. Dwayne, what are your thoughts about that potential crop of, well, potentials?
I wasn't interested in any of those names you spit out there. You were listing them all. I'm like, no, 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 hell no. I mean, all those names you mentioned, I saw the establishment, you know. And that's why I'm not working for the Bruner campaign, but I liked his style. I liked the idea of him getting that spot. And I'll tell you why. Because it once again puts the focus back on the economy, because that's all Bruner did. He ran as a businessman who can fix things. And if he comes in, that whole thing about the legitimate rape, illegitimate rape, that goes out the window and the focus comes back on the economy. That's what I like. I think that's what they should do. And I think it makes the most sense. I mean, if the guy that people chose, for whatever reason, if he drops out, then the guy who came in second should replace him.
With a state seat, it probably goes to committee, to the state central committee. And I would guess, I mean, if I was a betting man, that Bruner would try to make his case that he should be the person to replace Aiken on the ballot. That said, to Susie's suggestion of Ann Wagner, now, Dwayne, I know you gave that the hell no.
No, that was Kit Bond.
Oh, okay.
I might join him in that, I have to confess. Okay, no,
but Ann Wagner, wouldn't she kind of steal the thunder of that whole, you know, war on women thing, that, you know, even take the rape allegation away, that even she could probably put it back on, put the focus back on the economy?
Well, I think if you were going to do that, you'd go to Sarah Steelman. I think she'd be the more dynamic candidate to do something like that than Ann. Nothing against Ann, but again, Sarah was the one that ran for this seat. If Ann wanted it, she should have run for it. And right. if you wanted to go for the squashing the war on women argument, you would go with Sarah Steelman.
Oh, you make a good argument there, Dwayne.
That's a good one. I did pull up, and I don't know how accurate this is, but it's from Political Ticker blogs on CNN, and it says after the candidate's name is off the ballot, it's up to the state party to choose a replacement candidate. When picking a nominee, the party must meet the following requirements. 1, a majority of the members of the nominating committee must be present. 2, members must be present in person to vote, with few exceptions. 3, a majority vote of the members present is needed to nominate a candidate. And 4, the state party committee may not delegate its authority to any other person or group. That tells me nothing, to be honest. I mean, it says there's a procedure in place, but the party's going to do the picking. But as far as who they can pick from, doesn't really help as much.
That's true. But I'd probably see, you know, some jockeying around. I mean, and again, these are names that have just been tossed out by the media. There's no nothing to make us think that Kit Bond or John Ashcroft or even Jim Talent would want this.
Jim Talent's already said he doesn't want it.
Well, see, there you go. So you can mark his name off the list. Yeah, Kid Bond, you know, he's old. No offense to Senator Bond, but, I mean, let's be honest.
I'd like to offend Senator Bond.
and John Ashcroft, he's a throwback to the past. I don't know how well he would be.
I don't know if that's a wise way to go.
I mean, your options might be just to go back to the original field, you know, minus Aiken. And at that point, that would be an interesting kind of rundown if it is, you know, Steelman versus Brunner, who would be the party choice? I mean, this wasn't Steelman's first go around in Missouri elections.
No, she's been around. She was our state treasurer before. She's faced some tough fights. She had a tough battle against Kenny Hellschaft a couple years ago
for governor, right?
For governor, yeah. So yeah, she's a veteran of Missouri politics.
Well, we're left with an interesting situation there in Missouri.
I believe it's called a quandary.
Yeah. At the very least, and frankly, you know, by the time this show airs, we'll know what's going on, but heck, it was still fun to discuss.
Absolutely.
Well, okay, just some final thoughts from you guys. Where do you, how do you see this playing out? Dwayne, we'll let you go.
Well, hopefully, and this is just, you know, one guy's opinion, hopefully Aiken sees what kind of damage he's doing, not only to himself, but or the chances of winning Missouri's seat, but to all the other candidates. And the chance of winning the Senate, you know, being gone because of his selfishness to stay in the race. I hope that, personally, I hope that he drops out and that they go to John Brunner or Sarah Steelman.
Susie?
I don't know that I disagree with much of what Dwayne said there. I think I might feel, have more of an emotional reaction to it, having met the man and looking ever so forward to our interview tonight that didn't happen. Yeah. And knowing him, you know, in my observation and in dealings with him, to be a decent man who's sincere in his beliefs. And I hate to see something like this happen to him, but it is by his own hand. And, I don't think that there's enough damage control to save him. And I don't want to see the rest of the ticket pay a price for that either. So, you know, I'm leaning towards hoping that he sees the light and decides maybe it's better to let somebody else come in and give it a better shot, because I just don't know that you can recover from this.
Yeah. I've got something that I want to add before we still have time.
Sure, absolutely. Go right ahead.
It's in Chapter 115, page 88 of the Missouri Laws. Except as provided in Section 115.361, a party nominating committee of a political party may select a party candidate for nomination to an office on the primary election ballots in the following cases. If there are no candidates for nomination as the party candidate due to withdrawal after 5 p.m. on the last day in which a person may file as a candidate. So that may be what we're looking at. It would be a party thing, and it's all on the Missouri Secretary of State's website. It just took a little bit of Googling to find, but yeah, it looks like it would be the party nominating it. And if you go to scroll on down, I don't want to read the whole thing, but it explains how they pick who, and it looks like they can just choose.
Yeah, I think they've got free reign at that point, it looks like to me. So that'll all depend on all the behind the scenes jockeying that's going
on.
So we've
kind of moved from quandary to quite possibly cluster.
You might call it that.
Well, okay. Well, on that note, Dwayne, where can the listeners find you on the internet?
Well, I am, of course, the editor-in-chief of LibertyNews.com, and I'm writing there. And the Liberty News Network, we also have CampaignTrailReport.com, right over there, and the Union Label blog. I think I've written there. Not sure.
You're everywhere, Dwayne.
That's he is all everywhere.
AllAmericanBlogger.com, and then there's, you know, Facebook.com/Dwayne Lester, and my soon-to-be-released Dwayne Lester fan page, which has all of one fan right now.
I'm going right now.
Well, I was going to say, we'll change that.
Soon-to-be-two when my mom finds it.
Well, Dwayne, thanks again for being on tonight and for offering your insights.
I'm sorry, but I just looked on Twitter, and Chris Morgan apparently just called Todd Aiken a gutless little twerp.
Oh, wow.
You know, Todd Aiken probably would have been better to come on our show tonight.
Well, he could have, because he canceled. He canceled on Piers Morgan. That's why he called him a gutless old twerp.
Oh, he canceled.
That probably was Todd Aiken on the phone earlier. I got time, Susie.
If only I'd picked up.
Holy cow. Well, Dwayne, again, thanks for being on tonight. We have more Gillespie coming up right after this. You are listening to FTRradio.com. We'll be right back.
Leave me when I say you'll be last to know. Liar schemes and soul machines will hang me from my rope.
All right, you people on the left and right coasts, listen up. If you want to know what your fellow conservatives in the heartland of America, or as you call it, the flyover country, are thinking, go to your web browser and look at HoosierAccess.com. There you will find out what is on the mind of conservatives from the crossroads of America. HoosierAccess.com is the source for news, opinion, and commentary from conservative minds in the heartland. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today. You can also follow at HoosierAccess on Twitter and HoosierAccess on Facebook and subscribe to this show and podcast. Podcast forum on iTunes. That's HoosierAccess.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I want to thank all of my guests tonight. We spoke with President of AFP, Tim Phillips. And in the absence of Congressman Todd Akin, we had the all-American blogger, Dwayne Lester.
Who filled in admirably, I must say.
He did. And it's only Tuesday and I'm already wiped out.
Oh, me too.
Gosh.
When's the weekend?
Tell me about it. Well, as we look towards the weekend, people will be spending a ton of time online. So, Smoozy, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at SmoozyQ, and they can find me on my blog at qwithaview.wordpress.com.
And you can find me at Josh Gillespie on the Twitters, as well as joshgillespie.com, where you can find all the previous shows of Gillespie. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. Coming up next is Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor with the Snark Factor Players. You've been listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. So for the Smoozy Q, thanks for tuning in tonight. We'll see you again next week.
Speak like you used to. Where do we go to now?
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?